This is the VPR Vermont PBS U.S. Senate debate on Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Throughout this month, VPR and Vermont PBS have been teaming up for a series of debates broadcast live on both the radio and on TV. We've been hearing from candidates for statewide and federal office in an effort to help you make informed choices when you go out to vote on November 6th. Today's final debate is with the two candidates for U.S. Senate joining us here today, incumbent independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Burlington, who's seeking a third term, and Republican challenger Lawrence Zupan, a real estate broker from Manchester. It's nice to have both of you with us today.
Thank
you
for joining us. Thank you.
Good to be here.
Here's the format we're using throughout the campaign 2018 debates. In the first segment, I will ask common questions of both of you. In the second segment, you'll have an opportunity to ask each other questions with a brief follow-up question. Then we're going to turn to a series of questions submitted by Vermonters. And if we have time, which I hope we will have a lightning round of questions with some very brief answers. And we will conclude our program with a one-minute closing statement from each of the candidates. And this will go very fast, so let's get right into the questions. Last week, 14 explosive devices were sent through the mail to people associated with the Democratic Party. The man who's been arrested is a fervent Trump supporter who has used social media to blast politicians he disagrees with. A little over a year ago, House Majority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana and three others were shot at a congressional baseball practice by a left-wing activist. Donald Trump has praised people who body-slam journalists and assault opponents. The man accused of shooting 11 people in a synagogue on Saturday had raged online about immigration and the resettlement of refugees, in addition to anti-Semitic rants. Political rhetoric can lead to actual physical violence, and while we may not be able to directly tie any one person's divisive language to someone with murderous intentions, it's tough to ignore how divisive the current dialogue is. What can you do in Congress to ramp down the partisan rhetoric and pour water on partisan flames that have led us to this fever pitch? Lawrence Zupan?
Well, that's an excellent question, Jane, and my heart goes out to all those who have suffered from these heinous acts, which don't represent the best of America, that's for sure. To answer your question, what I would do, first of all, is I see myself as a unifier and a healer. Why? Because my approach is to solve problems with real-life solutions. And I'm not into partisan attacks. In fact, I prefer to find the best solutions, whichever party might bring them. For example, I would be quick to praise Barack Obama, though I will admit I didn't vote for him, when he came up with the U.S. Digital Service, which was a wonderful idea, which President Trump also doubled down on. So wherever the good ideas come from is where we have to employ them for the benefit of Vermonters and for the benefit of America. It's not about promoting oneself and one's ideas for the sake of self-glorification or for the sake of promoting one's next reach for office. It's for the sake of America. You must remember that if you are sent to Vermont, to D.C. as a senator for Vermont, that you have a solemn oath and an obligation to serve the people who sent you there.
Lawrence Zupan, in an earlier interview with me, though, this campaign season, you suggested that your opponent sitting across the table, Bernie Sanders, doesn't love America.
That's not what I said.
You said he's aligned with political movements that have murdered millions. Do you consider that to be inflammatory language?
What I said was I asked the senator to repeat a simple phrase. And then when you pursued it, by asking me, do I imply that the senator doesn't love America, I said, I'm implying that he loves socialism more than America because that's what he keeps promoting.
So do you think that that's inflammatory language?
No, I don't. I think it reflects the fact that the senator has spent the last 2 to 4 years promoting socialism above basic American principles, against the principles that have made America the role model and the envy of the world. And I didn't say that he didn't love America. I asked him to repeat this phrase, I love America. I have always loved America, and I always will love America, which is a phrase I'm proud to say.
Bernie Sanders, what would you do to tamp down inflammatory language, partisan bickering, things that can actually lead to, as we've seen, real violence?
Yes. I disagree with Donald Trump on virtually everything, on his economic policies, on his health care policies, on his immigration policies, on his opposition to a woman's right to choose. But what I dislike about him most, Jane, is for cheap political gain, he is trying to divide us up. And I think the evidence is quite clear that Donald Trump is a racist a sexist, a homophobe, and a religious bigot. So when you have a president of the United States moving the country in that direction, when, as you indicated, he says out in Montana to a congressman who body slammed a journalist, hey, he's my kind of guy. When you have a president who, during his rallies running for president, said he would provide legal fees for people who may have beaten up somebody. When you have a president who says to the media, which is the essence of what a free society is about, you are, you, Jane, by the way, are an enemy of the people. And you have these large rallies, and people are pointing their fingers and screaming at CNN and other news journals. I think this president has got to calm it down and tell the American people that a free press is what we are about, that we are one people, and not try to divide us up. Now, having said that, let me just having said that, Trump had millions of votes. Hillary Clinton had millions of votes. I have millions of votes. And I'm not going to sit here and blame Trump because some sick person did something, or if Hillary Clinton or my candidate.
Well, good. Let me ask you about that, because, you know, when you were running for president, some of your supporters who got the nickname Bernie Bros were online. The L.A. Times described them this way: online trolls who attack journalists, politicians and fellow voters they perceive to be pro-Clinton with misogynistic, often vulgar attacks. You denounce them.
Yes.
But in retrospect, what would you do? I mean,
First of all, not only did we denounce them, I'm not so sure that they were our supporters. I mean, there's a lot of ugly things that are going on, whether it was Russian trolls or whether it was others who try to pretend to be Bernie Sanders supporters. But I absolutely denounce all forms of violence and all kinds of ugly statements against candidates.
May I have a moment?
Let's move on. You're going to have a chance to talk to each other in the second round, and if you'd like to bring it up there, that's a good place, because we want to make sure we get a lot of topics.
Well, so I am going to move. Senator Sanders seems to think that Donald Trump is sitting here. It's actually Lauren Zupan.
Lauren Zupan, I'm going to move on to the second topic.
Actually, I do know that, Mr. Zupan.
Thank you.
In the past 2 years, there's been a lot of talk about immigration, from finding a solution to the Dreamers, children who were brought here to this country by their parents or adults, to building a wall to prevent people from crossing our southern border. Right now, there's a lot of focus on a group of people who have fled from Central America and are currently in Mexico walking towards the U.S. border. This group of people, by the way, will be nowhere near the U.S. border by Election Day. But nonetheless, this is fuel for a lot of conversation about immigration. President Trump has said he may send as many as 1,000 troops to defend the border. Everyone agrees something has to be done on immigration. What plan do you think will get the bipartisan support it's going to need in order to address problems with the immigration system in this country? Bernie Sanders?
Well, number one, the last poll that I saw on this issue, Jane, had 80% of the American people supporting a legal status and legal protection for the young people in the DACA program, 1.8 million people. And I strongly support that. These are people, young people, who came to this country at a very, very young age. Many of them are in school, they're working, some of them are in the military. So we have to provide legal status to the DACA people. We have about 10 million undocumented people in this country. Overwhelming majority of the people are honest, hardworking people. I believe we have got to provide, and I voted for, comprehensive immigration reform and a path toward citizenship. And I resent very much. Look, immigration is a difficult issue, and people can have honest disagreements about it. But to demonize immigrants is, again, not what this country is about. And that is what Trump does in trying to divide us up.
So in order, though, to have something that works better, I mean, everybody on all sides of the political spectrum agree something has to be done. But it doesn't ever seem to go forward. So I mean, how would you make that work?
Well, we had bipartisan support in the Senate for immigration reform, just not enough votes. And I would hope very much that the Congress listens to the American people. What the American people want is not only to protect the young people in DACA, they do want comprehensive immigration reform. If you threw out all of the undocumented workers in agriculture today, some 2 million people, food prices would be off the charts, and you'd have a collapse in agriculture in America.
Lauren Zupan, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I must make a clear demarcation between legal immigration and illegal immigration. People from one side of the political divide seem to enjoy muddying that water. Legal immigration is where people are allowed into the country based on the respect for the laws of our land, which all citizens are called upon to respect. Illegal immigration is where people crash our borders and wind up living off a welfare system that is paid for by the taxpayers and the citizens of the United States of America. So we have to make a clear distinction. My grandparents were legal immigrants. In my youth, I helped somebody obtain a legal green card, and I knew what a rigorous process it was, but it was legal and correct, and it was accomplished. What do you say to people who are just allowed to come in here and take advantage of our welfare system when other people have been following all the rules to come in here? Now, addressing the immediate problem, Senator Sanders a moment ago seemed to talk about Russian trolls as being the people who sponsored the Bernie bros. I don't know where the truth
is. Actually, I didn't say that.
Okay.
Wait, I'm going to ask a follow-up question, because the specific question I'm asking you is what plan would work? You know, it is legal to declare asylum. It is legal to enter the United States and ask for asylum. So, you know, we're talking here about a couple different things.
We're talking about 7,000 people in an organized system. I'm asking who's behind that, first of all. And what is the government of the United States supposed to do when there's an organized invasion of the country's borders?
So what would you do? If you're in Congress, what's your plan for immigration?
Well, first of all, I would make a distinction between those who are already here illegally and have settled into life, and a distinction between those and those who want to use that as an example to crash the borders. So first, I would secure the border so that we could stanch the flow of blood, so to speak. And then I would deal with the people who are here in a humane way, which would include a certain adjustment period, after which time they would be invited to go out of the country and come back and apply for citizenship.
Okay. Let's talk about another topic here. I want to talk about climate change. The UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change recently released a report that suggested that some of the most dire consequences of climate change could come sooner than we expected, as early as 2040. Lawrence Zupan, do you believe that climate is changing at a rapid pace that is primarily caused by human activity?
You know, the wonderful thing is that as Mr. Kurzweil, the head of Google Engineering, has made clear, if the United States government would just stop stifling innovation, never mind having 35% renewables by 2050, which has seemed to be an acceptable goal, we could have 90 to 100% renewables by 2030. What the U.S. government has to do is stop stifling innovation by subsidizing industries that are not able to carry their own weight. We are living in a digital age, a golden age of tremendous growth and opportunity. While we're sitting here right now, there are breakthroughs in plasma fusion, in geothermal, in next-generation solar, which will render this whole dialogue an antiquity very soon if we can stop telling people by force of government what they have to accept and how much they have to pay other people to do what they could be doing anyway.
Do you agree, though, that climate change at this rapid pace right now is primarily caused by human activity?
I agree that that'll become an academic point very soon.
Right,
if...
But do you believe it? That's the question.
It's not a question. Let me ask you a question. What difference does it make what I believe if my solutions will solve the very problem that the climate, the people who believe in climate change being caused by humans, would have the same goals as me? I have the same goals. I have a pink pair of lungs that breathe air. I don't want pollution. I don't want excess carbon. I want to encourage all of the renewable sources that can replace the 19th century technology of petroleum and fossil fuel. And I believe it will happen.
Safe to say you don't support a carbon tax, then, a federal carbon tax?
Well, a carbon tax, you know, is the most regressive form of tax, because the people who earn $30,000 to $50,000 or less, who have to drive to work every day and have to heat their homes to pay an extra dollar a gallon, why do we want to punish those people? Is it for some ideological cause, or to prove a point I think it's a terrible mistake. Furthermore, it wouldn't even help the problem it purports to help of in this small state to bilk the drivers of Vermont out of more money just to drive to work and to heat their homes.
Well, let's stop there. Senator Sanders, I know you support a federal carbon tax. In fact, you introduced one in 2013.
I introduced comprehensive energy reform, which included
a carbon tax. So to the point that Lawrence Zupan was just making, how would you ensure that it's not regressive, hurting the most vulnerable people who can least afford
the tax? It's not just the carbon tax. Yeah. I mean, what Mr. Zupan is saying is what many of my Republican colleagues are saying. They usually phrase it a little bit differently, Mr. Zubin. They say, I am not a scientist, and I really don't know. But let me tell you, we just had a report, as Jane just indicated, from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which was a composite of thousands of studies from 40 countries around the Earth. So let me be very clear where Mr. Zupan was not. A, I believe that climate change is very real. I believe it is caused by human activity. I believe it is already causing devastating problems in the United States of America and around the world. And I am scared to death about the report from the IPCC, where they say if we don't get our act together in 12 years, this planet will be suffering irreparable harm. That's the kind of planet we're going to be leaving to our kids, which will be increasingly uninhabitable and unhealthy. We need to take drastic action to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. I am proud of being an author of one of the more comprehensive pieces of energy legislation, of bringing money into the state to move us to solar energy. We have got to take on the fossil fuel industry, and Donald Trump were more concerned about the short-term profits of the oil industry and the coal industry than they are about the future of America.
So since he mentioned my name, I get to answer.
No, you don't.
No.
To the point of a carbon tax, how do you ensure that it's not regressive?
What you can do is when you raise the money, you can bring it back into those communities that are impacted to make sure precisely that it is not a regressive tax. If there's anything I think that I stand for, and that we're not going to put the burdens of society on low-income and working families who are struggling today. In a time of massive income and wealth inequality, it's going to be the people on top who are going to help us out of this problem.
All right. I'm about to give you guys a chance to talk to each other, and you know, then it's in some ways, I guess, a little bit of a free-for-all. But let me tackle one more topic here before we do. So on trade and tariffs, Lawrence Zupan, you're not a fan of the U.S. trade policies that we have had. You'd like to have fewer policies. And Bernie Sanders, you're also not a fan of the trade policies that we've had with China, Central America, and Mexico. You've said that they have led to the loss of millions of jobs in the United States and also to destitution in other countries. This perhaps is an area in which you and President Trump agree, although you have different reasons and different
solutions.
Don't
carry it too far.
President Trump has negotiated a new trade deal with Mexico and Canada, very creatively named the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. It comes on the heels of significant import tariffs and retaliatory tariffs placed on all kinds of goods coming into and out of this country. How will you vote on the new version of NAFTA, and is it a good agreement?
Well, I don't know that I think it will be altered by the time it gets through Congress. I believe that our past trade policies, as you indicate, have been a disaster. I think they've led to the loss of tens of thousands of manufacturing plants in this country, where large corporations, middle-sized corporations, are shutting down here, going for cheap labor in China, Mexico, and other desperate countries where people have paid 50 cents an hour or a dollar an hour. So we need to create trade policies that work for American workers, but also do not crush the poor people around the world. Among other things, my concern with Trump's kind of helter-skelter policies is that they lack the kinds of enforcement capabilities. You can have a piece of legislation, but if it's not enforceable, it doesn't mean anything at all.
Lawrence Zupan?
Well, you know, after watching the last several administrations basically be a trade treaty doormat for most of the world, China, Japan, and Europe, I'm glad that someone at least is raising the question of equity in our trading partners. And I believe that what President Trump has done is he's put the world on notice that the previous treaties wherein we were taken advantage of and we didn't use our skills at negotiating nearly as well as they could have been used, those days are over. I'm glad that at last there's somebody sitting in the White House who's rolled up his sleeves and shown the world that there's actually a bicep left in America. And so that's a beginning for new trade treaty negotiations. And that's a beginning for success in negotiating. When the other side thinks you're weak and you're going to roll over, that's a formula for disaster, which is what we've experienced for the last 30 years. So the present tariff situation, I believe, is sort of like the guide wheels on the back of a bicycle when you're learning how to ride. And that as after a certain point, we won't need those tariffs anymore because we will have normalized our trade relationships with the rest of the world. And the rest of the world will give the United States the proper respect it's deserved.
That concludes the first segment of the debate. When we come back, the candidates are going to have an opportunity to talk to each other, ask one another questions directly, and answer. This is the U.S. Senate debate live on VPR and Vermont PBS.
Hi, I'm Holly Groschner.
And I'm Scott Finn. We live in serious times filled with change and uncertainty, and Vermont's public media outlets are here to serve our communities with trusted, unbiased information and to be a forum for civil public discourse.
This election season, Vermont PBS and VPR have joined forces to bring our viewers and listeners a broad range of election coverage. For the first time in our histories, we've brought radio to TV with the VPR Vermont PBS debates.
Together, we've also conducted two public opinion polls to find out where you stand on issues that impact us all. With these debates and polls, and with continuous news coverage, interviews, and candidate commentaries, we bring you the information you need to make informed decisions.
That's the power of your public media, working together for the good of all Vermonters towards a more informed democracy.
This is the VPR Vermont PBS U.S. Senate debate. I'm Jane Lindholm. Joining us today in VPR Stetson Studio One are candidates for U.S. Senate, Republican challenger Lawrence Zupan and independent incumbent Bernie Sanders. The candidates will now have an opportunity to ask each other questions. I want to remind you, questions should be 30 seconds, and they really do need to be questions. You'll get a chance to answer, and then there's a chance for a follow-up question and answer as well. We're going to start with Lawrence Zupan, your question for Bernie Sanders.
The last time you ran for office, you missed 37 out of 38 votes one quarter and 115 out of 163 the rest of that year. How can you justify to the voters of Vermont such dereliction of duty? And how will it be believed that if you were reelected for the next 2 years, you will be making Vermonters a priority over your personal, political, and presidential goals?
As somebody who served as mayor of Burlington and the Congress for 16 years and now in the Senate for 12 years, I've always made Vermont my major priority. But as I think you know, what you forgot to tell people, I ran for president of the United States of America. And when you run for president of the United States of America, you got to get out of Vermont and you got to get out of Washington. And you got to run all over the country to talk about the need for health care for all people, for raising the minimum wage to a living wage, to deal with the issues of climate change and a woman's right to choose. And in running all over the country, what I'm really proud of is that in many ways we have changed the political dialogue in America, that right now there is a broad consensus that we need a government that works for all of us and not just the 1%. And I'm proud of the role that I played. So obviously when you run for president of the United States, you're going to miss votes. But I made it my business, by the way, to come back to Washington when they were key votes, when my vote mattered.
So for the next 2 years, what will you be doing if you are reelected? Running for president or representing the people of Vermont?
Well, that is a decision.
Or representing the people of Vermont?
That is, I always represent the people of Vermont. And when we talk about legislation that protects working people in this country, wherever I am, that benefits the people of Vermont.
Senator Sanders, a question for Lawrence Zupan.
I am very proud, Jane, to have a lifetime 100% pro-choice of voting record. And I must tell you that I get tired of many of my conservative colleagues who talk about getting the government off the backs of the people. We want to deregulate everything. But when it comes to a woman's right to control her own body, well, they think that state government and federal government should be right in there telling every woman in this country how she can control her own body, well, whether she can control her own body. Mr. Zupan, do you believe that a woman has a right to control her own body? Or should that be the federal government?
You know, knowing that you were going to ask me this question, I promised my wife that I would answer it after you answered the following question. How far outside a mother's womb does the baby's skull have to be before you would forbid... I'm answering your question. If you don't like the answer, I'm sorry. How far outside the mother's womb does the baby have to be before you would forbid the doctor from puncturing its skull and vacuuming out its brains?
All right, good. How We've far? Heard that rhetoric from Trump.
How far?
I am gathering that what you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you believe it is the government who should tell every woman in this country whether or not she's going to have an abortion or not.
I believe that this is a settled law in this country, and that by talking about abortion all the time, you are ignoring a bigger scandal that affects every woman, whether she's post or premenopausal. And that is the fact that women's health care in this country is a second-class status. Do you know that almost all biomedical research that's done and lab research is geared towards men because it's less expensive? Please don't interrupt me, Senator. Well, if I am the new senator, I will sponsor legislation that puts women on an equal footing with men for the important, all-consumingly important biomedical research. This is by far a more pressing issue for all the women of Vermont and all the women of America than the bygone conclusion about the issue of abortion.
The answer then, through the non-answer, is that you don't believe a woman should be able to make that decision. You believe the government should. And I got to tell you something. I respect people. I respect people who have different points of view, and I really do. Friends of mine have different points of view. But what I don't respect is the hypocrisy of conservatives saying, we want to deregulate, we want small government, we want to get government off the backs of the American people.
Can I finish, please? Okay.
But on this issue, somehow, government should tell every woman. Now, there are women who do not want to have an abortion. There are women who look at that option. It should not be the government that makes that decision. It should be the woman.
We should allow women not to be coerced into a binary choice where they either have to have an abortion or be forced into a life of poverty and lack. We should encourage, as a government and as a humane society, we should encourage all the wonderful other options that are available for women that people like Planned Parenthood and Bernie Sanders never tell the American people about, like adoption, like ministries that will help take care of these children. There are so many other options rather than abortion or poverty.
Another question for Senator Sanders. Lauren Supan.
Yes. I'm so glad you've been able to live the American dream to become a millionaire by selling your books on Amazon. What advice do you have for young Vermonters who would want to be a multimillionaire like you?
Well, unfortunately, I am not a multimillionaire. And I'll tell you how you could do it. I grew up in a family that did not have a lot of money. And we wrote a book. I wrote a book. It's called Our Revolution. You should read it. It's a pretty good book. It was number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list, translated to 5 or 6 languages, sold all over the world. And you know what? When you write a best-selling book, you actually make some money. And I did. And I'm not ashamed of the fact that I wrote a book that talked about how we revitalize American democracy and was very specific about ideas about how we can create an economy and a government and a healthcare system that works for all. So in that narrow sense, Mr. Supan, you could become a millionaire, I suppose, if you write a best-selling book. That's what I did.
So a book about our revolution. I would like to encourage everyone who read your book to also read the history of the American Revolution, much of its glorious history having occurred right here in Vermont and nearby. And my contention is that the first American Revolution, which declared that we have the inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and which gave rise to the United States Constitution and the most successful country in the history of the world, that first American Revolution, my dear fellow Vermonters, gave us everything we need, and that Senator Sanders' reinvention of the word revolution to describe the post-Marxist ideas where government takes over everything and in its infinite wisdom redistributes to everybody else is not revolutionary at all. It's regressionary. The United States of America has fed, housed, clothed in freedom more people than any other country in the history of the world. Senator Sanders' big top-down government control, which he calls revolutionary, has caused more lack, want, suffering, depression, stifling of the human spirit, and death than any other system in the history of the world. And this Venezuelan system is what Senator Sanders wants to bring to the shores of the blessed country of the United States of America.
Of course I'd laugh at you. You know, what you're doing is echoing your good friend, the president.
I'm not echoing anyone. These thoughts come from my mind and my heart.
Really? Well, they echo
These are my thoughts.
Well, they're pretty pathetic thoughts. Because what you are doing is doing what Trump does. You're equating what I have to say with Venezuela, which is a failed economy. Why don't you equate it with what goes on in Denmark and Sweden?
Capitalist systems.
Excuse me, which provides health care to all people as a right, which provides free public education through medical school and graduate school, which has a tax system that is fair and progressive.
I'll tell you why.
Environmental protection, which has early childhood education, which would be the envy of the world. So please do not give us this nonsense. Vermonters know me a little bit better than that. They know that I do not believe in authoritarianism. In fact, I am fighting right now and running around this country to oppose Republican efforts to suppress the vote, to make it harder for poor people or people of color to vote. I have spent my entire life trying to revitalize democracy, to make this country as democratic and open, as free as possible.
Isn't that a red light over there?
You've had a red light, too. Look, okay, you guys, just...
So do not equate what I'm doing with the old Soviet Union or Mao Zedong or Venezuela.
I'll refute your notion that the Scandinavian countries are socialist countries. They got their money, and they get their money by having capitalist systems. They are able to have a bigger welfare system because guess whose military umbrella protects them? Their healthcare system is full of rationing, and they also... They also piggyback the billions of dollars of medical research that's done in this country that enables them to spend less on medical research. So these countries that you love to champion, these Scandinavian countries, they're rock-solid capitalist countries. Furthermore, there's top populations of 5 to 10 million. Norway, North Sea oil, that amount of wealth has given them enough money to feed and house and clothe everybody in their 5 million population. So the Scandinavian model is not the one. The one to compare Senator Sanders' policies to are Cuba and Venezuela and North Korea, because that's where socialism has, in fact, failed. He loves to rail against authoritarianism and oligarchies as if that's what we have here. We have a president that's elected. We have a Congress that's elected. We have a senator that's elected. You know where you have the authoritarian oligarchies? In the socialist countries where Senator Sanders used to like to champion, like Venezuela, before the people started dumpster diving for dinner, then he stopped talking about that.
Okay.
That's simply untrue. To sit here and suggest that I am sympathetic to the government of North Korea, which is a brutal dictatorship, which has led its people into starvation and all kinds of horror, is, you know, you should do a little bit better than that, Mr. Zubin.
Take
that
Venezuela.
Just an absurd.
We're going to stop
have
here.
Venezuela.
And do you have another question for Lawrence Zubin?
Yeah, I do. You know, when people like Mr. Zubin talk about the genius of the markets and blessings of the markets, usually what they are talking about is more tax breaks for billionaires. Trump's tax proposal, which I voted against, provided 83% of the benefits to the top 1%, is going to increase the deficit by about $1.5 trillion. And then what Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan want to do is, having driven up the deficit, is come back and cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. So, Mr. Zupan, my question to you is, would you support cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid?
I wouldn't support cuts to them, but what I would support is something you have systematically ignored while championing those programs. You have systematically ignored the $160 billion a year of Medicare fraud, abuse, and corruption. So right there, we could have paid for the college education of every college-age kid for a year. So what I am in favor, and that's emblematic, unfortunately, of big government systems. Look, some big government systems may be necessary. Some of them may be even do more good than harm. But when we give them a free pass without any watchdogs to see where that $160 billion a year of fraud and abuse are going, that is a tragedy, and it's a travesty, and it has to be stopped. So right there, if we could recover even 50% of the waste and fraud and corruption, we wouldn't have to even have the conversation about scarcity. So that's your answer.
Of course, I haven't ignored the problems within those systems.
But I think that
they are an enormously important part of America. And I worry very much, you see, and I've been clear on it. Paul Ryan wants to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Are you prepared to tell the people of Vermont that you would vigorously oppose those cuts?
I would not be in favor of cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. What I am in favor of is holding every senator and congressman to task for that complete dereliction of duty in eliminating fraud in all three of those systems, in ignoring the Congressional Budget Office's prediction, and that's a nonpartisan government entity, prediction that by 2026, those august programs will be completely bankrupt. So how can you talk to me about expanding a system that is on the verge of bankruptcy and has unfettered fraud and abuse without even beginning to address the fraud and abuse?
I can talk to you about it.
No, I'm not finished. You couldn't even fix, when you were the chairman of the VA, you couldn't even fix the system that was allowing veterans, 21 million people, to suffer and wait for 120 days on waiting lines. And yet you want to take a system, you want to design and control a system of health care for 326 million Americans when you've never even shown that you know how to manage and control anything? I don't know how you're going to do that,
Senator
Sanders.
Well, I will tell you how. First of all, I heard some of your attacks on the VA. Why don't you go out and talk to the veterans in the state of Vermont and all over this country? And what they will tell you, that they are very supportive of the VA, and they are vigorously opposed to any effort by the part of the Trump administration or anybody else to privatize the VA. I'm very proud. You want to criticize me? I am very proud.
I do.
But I added $5 billion more to making sure that the VA has the doctors
and the nurses.
Excuse me. The doctors and the nurses work with Senator John McCain on that. Doctors and the nurses and the staff they need to provide the quality care. I am very proud that here in the state of Vermont, we have expanded community-based outreach clinics, improved the facility at White River Junction. In terms of health care in general, if you are going to defend a system which allows 30 million people to have zero health insurance,
I didn't defend
even
that.
More who are underinsured,
don't put words
which allows us to pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, and at the end of all of that, end up spending twice as much per capita is almost any other country on earth, including Canada, I think you're barking up the wrong tree.
Well,
what the American people want in a recent poll that I saw, 70% of the American people support health care as a right and Medicare for all, and I will fight for that.
So you will fight for expanding a system that you have never fixed in the first place.
I have never fixed.
Yes. You were the chairman for 2 years of the Veterans Administration, and though you threw $16 billion at it, it still suffers from all of the inequities and waiting and suffering of our precious veterans that it did before you got there. Look, if you can't fix and make to work a system for 21 million people, how are you going to make a system work for 326 million Americans? It's just not going to happen.
I think the answer is that it is very easy to pick apart any healthcare system, whether it is a local hospital, whether it is the VA, which has 146 medical centers, and say there's a problem here. There are problems. There are problems at every medical facility in the United States of America. There is a problem when we spend twice as much per person on healthcare as do the people of any other
That's
nation.
That's because we have the biomedical research.
In terms of healthcare, what we need to do are two things. Number one, we have got to agree that healthcare is a right, not a privilege, guarantee healthcare at all. Number two, we have to do away with the bureaucracy, the waste, and the dysfunctionality of the current system, which costs us so much money, and make it into a cost-effective Medicare for all system.
We're going to stop right there, and we're going to move on to questions that our listeners have sent us, and we'll be doing that after this break. This concludes the second segment of our program. You are listening to the VPR Vermont PBS U.S. Senate debate live.
Vermonters are listening closely to the candidates for office as they decide how to cast their votes in the general election on November 6th.
All this month, VPR and Vermont PBS have been teaming up to bring you live debates leading up to Election Day. Today, we're finishing our series with the U.S. Senate debate. You can find all of our past debates at vpr.net or at vermontpbs.org.
And our debate series is just one way that VPR and Vermont PBS are keeping you informed. You can also see results from the newest VPR Vermont PBS poll with insights into where Vermonters stand in this election. You'll find head-to-head results for candidates in multiple races, plus what respondents think about some of the biggest issues facing the state.
Vermont PBS and Vermont Public Radio are both committed to keeping you informed as you make decisions about how to cast your ballot in November. Listen to VPR and watch Vermont PBS for all of our public media team election coverage.
This is the VPR Vermont PBS U.S. Senate debate on Vermont Edition. With us today are two candidates for the position, the incumbent independent Senator Bernie Sanders and Republican challenger Lawrence Zupan. Now for some questions from Vermonters, and I want to thank everyone who submitted questions in advance of the debate. Candidates, in this case, please do limit your answers to 60 seconds. And we're going to start with a question from Dave in Middlebury, who asks, if elected, what will you do to protect Vermont's choice to legalize cannabis from Jeff Sessions' promised crackdown on states that have legalized? Lawrence Zupan, you go first.
Well, I believe that a decision like that is best left to the states. I think there are many decisions that the Constitution declares, if not in the province as constitutionally declared, by the Constitution to be a federal responsibility, that it devolves down to the states. And that clearly would fall under that category. And that is an answer that is separate from whether or not the desirability of passing such a law and having cannabis freely available recreationally is a good idea. I've had a lot of anecdotal as well as academic evidence from Colorado that it's not exactly the paradise that it was cracked up to be. So I think that though you may favor recreational marijuana being legalized, I don't think it's a great idea personally, but I want to make a big distinction between that and the medicinal uses of cannabidiol, which has shown great promise in treating many different ailments.
Bernie Sanders?
We have a very broken criminal justice system. In which we end up as a nation having more people in jail than any other country on earth. And one of the major flaws of our broken criminal justice system is the fact that we have fought an unwise and destructive so-called war on drugs. Right now in Washington, is in part of the Federal Controlled Substance Act, marijuana is at the same level as heroin, which is basically insane. I believe that we need fundamental changes in our criminal justice system. I do not want to see lives being destroyed because people were arrested for possession of marijuana and then get a police record and maybe not be able to get a job or housing or go to school. I happen to support what Vermont has done and what other states are doing. If people want the right to smoke a cigarette, which I am not in favor of, I think tobacco has done enormous harm, that's their right. And certainly people have the right to smoke marijuana.
Let's go to a question from Patricia. Patricia says, I find it abhorrent that the U.S. is one of only two countries in the world, New Zealand being the other, that permit drug companies to market prescription drugs directly to consumers. Their budgets for this marketing must be enormous, and I would think that these dollars might be better spent developing new drugs and or lowering the prices on the ones we already have. What do you think? Are you willing to take on Big Pharma on this issue, Senator Sanders?
Well, I think most people in Vermont know that I have helped lead the effort with some success. Back in the late 1990s, I was the first member of the United States Congress to take people across the Canadian border, where women in Franklin County were able to buy breast cancer drugs at a fraction, one-tenth of the price that they pay in the United States. The bottom line is the pharmaceutical industry is the most greedy entity in the United States right now. They have spent billions of dollars in the last 20 years on lobbying and campaign contributions to create a climate which says they can raise their prices to any level at any time they want. The result, they make billions in profits. One out of five Americans cannot afford the medicine their doctors prescribe. I am working on, continue to work, on a series of pieces of legislation that would substantially lower prescription drug prices in this country and stop the incredible greed of the drug companies.
But Patricia specifically wants to know about marketing direct to consumers. Would you try to
on television?
Stop that?
Absolutely. They spend huge amounts of money, and then they charge high prices for that. I will trust the medical community to tell me the kinds of therapy that I need, the kinds of medicine I need, not a 30-second ad paid for by the pharmaceutical industry.
Lawrence Zupan?
In our home, it's a joke. Whenever we see these pharmaceutical ads come on TV, it's a formula they use. They have these people dancing on the beach and happy. If they ever had a disease, they're now healed by this drug that whose name is on the screen. And then at the end of the commercial, when they, by law, have to put all of the side effects like death, you know, light stuff like that, Then they have the nicest, sweetest music with the dogs and everybody happy. To me, it's deceptive and unfair, and I don't like it. However, here's the real problem. The real problem is that it costs, and I know you may not have much sympathy for the pharmaceutical industry, and believe me, I don't either, but it costs $2 billion to get a drug through the FDA. That system has to be reformed, not for the pharmaceutical industries, but for the American public, so that they can have more access to cutting-edge medicines that are available elsewhere in the world. Then the whole issue of marketing on TV becomes a secondary annoyance rather than a terrible intrusion.
May I respond to that? Or?
No, we're going to keep to time. But our third question comes from Jennifer, who says, can the candidates describe if and how they will put politics and personalities aside and work with the opposite party? There is too much finger-pointing, blaming, and name-calling on both sides of the aisle, and it's not doing any good for Americans. Lauren Zupan, you get to respond to Jennifer first.
Well, Jennifer, I think that's an excellent question. And my goal would be to be a unifier in the United States Senate. As I mentioned earlier, my objective in every situation is to find a solution that works, a legislative solution, whether it comes from a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. I'd even try to be blind to the source of it, if that were possible, in evaluating ideas and legislation. And in so doing, I think that that in itself will generate a collegial attitude which will benefit Vermonters and Americans. I agree. The polarization that has occurred with astounding intensity in the last 6 months, year, 2 years, 5 years, or even 12, is something that needs to be conscientiously reversed, but it starts in the heart and mind of the individual senator and congressman.
Bernie Sanders?
Well, that is a good question. Yeah, I would remind Jennifer that in the late 1990s, and this will surprise some people, I passed more amendments. That was when I was in the House. More amendments on the floor of the House that were bipartisan. That's when the Republicans controlled the House than any other member of the Congress. And what you do is you look at the issues. In fact, one of the amendments that we passed had to do with the high cost of prescription drugs. I worked with the late Senator John McCain on the most comprehensive veterans bill in recent history. So I think the goal here is to look at the issues. I think we have some potential. I think Republicans understand, as well as Democrats and independents, that our infrastructure is collapsing in this country, that we need to invest heavily in rebuilding our roads and our bridges and our water systems and our airports, and we can create many millions of good-paying jobs in doing that. That can be a bipartisan issue. So I think you look at the issues and you go from there in a bipartisan way.
Our fourth listener question comes from John in Putney, and we can kind of roll this right into the lightning round, if you'll oblige. So, fairly quickly, about 30 seconds, what is the one biggest problem in America today is what John in Putney is hoping you'll respond to. And Senator Sanders, you go first.
It's a hard question, but I think the answer is that I worry very, very much about the growth of oligarchy and authoritarianism in this country. And by oligarchy, I mean you today have an incredibly unfair distribution of wealth and power. And with that incredible wealth of the people on top, they are now spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to buy elections. So the fact that American democracy is evolving into a system where a handful of billionaires have enormous economic and political power is something that worries me very deeply.
Lauren Zupan.
Again, I would say that the place where you find authoritarian oligarchy is in socialist countries. That's not what you find in America. Although, and Senator Sanders is fond of talking about the distribution of wealth as if that's somehow the responsibility of government. The distribution of wealth occurs by people and companies producing wealth that didn't exist before.
So if not that, what's the biggest problem facing in America? That's what John wants you to answer.
The biggest problem facing America is Senator Sanders' success in persuading people that America isn't the greatest country in the world.
All right, so let's do a couple of lightning round questions. We've got a little bit of time, and these, if you can keep them to 15 seconds or less, that would be helpful. We can get more in. What should our minimum wage be? Lauren Zupan?
Well, I would invite Senator Sanders to join me in acknowledging that $15 an hour is totally inadequate for a living wage. In fact, I would invite him to join me in considering solving the benefits cliff problem, because even if we force employers to pay $15 an hour, many people will fall off the benefits cliff, by meaning that they will no longer be eligible for benefits. So what I think we need to do is, and this is a problem that can be solved, and when it's solved, it'll solve two problems at once, because we'll have more people productively reentering the workforce because they're not worried about losing their benefits, and we will have people enjoying the pride and privilege of being productive members of society.
This is lightning, remember.
Okay.
Bernie Sanders.
Mr. Zupan didn't answer the question.
What do you think?
And the answer to the question is that nobody in America who works 40 hours a week should be living in poverty. And I'm very proud, Mr. Zupan may not like it, but I'm very proud that as a result of my presidential campaign and working with people in the fight for 15 plus a union, we have made real progress all over this country in making it clear that at the very least, every worker in America should earn $15 an hour as a federal minimum wage. And right now, that means replacing a $7.25 starvation minimum wage in Congress.
Bernie Sanders, do transgender people deserve legal protected status?
Yes.
Lauren Zupan?
Everybody deserves legal protected status in this country, every citizen.
Including transgender people?
Yes.
To preserve their identity?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
President Trump has said he would consider legislating out the idea that somebody could have their gender be what they say their gender is, what their gender identity is, rather than what is either on their birth certificate or what genitalia they have.
You know, this is a complicated question that deserves a lot of study, because it's clear that people are usually born, as I've noticed in my 71 years, one gender or another. What is the cost to society of establishing a third gender? This is not to tell people what they could do with their surgical preferences, but when you ask society to make a judgment about it and alter the whole infrastructure of society around it, it needs to be studied.
Okay. Time now for a closing statement from each candidate, and we determined the order via a secret private coin flip yesterday. Senator Sanders, you get to start us off.
Well, let me begin by thanking you for sponsoring this debate, and most importantly, thanking the people of Vermont for allowing me to represent them for two terms in the United States Senate, as well as 16 years in the House. And Jane, what I have tried to do is take the values of this very great state of ours and stand up for justice, economic justice, social justice, environmental justice, racial justice, to try to create an economy which is not dominated by the people on top but works for everybody, try to revitalize American democracy in respecting and understanding the town meetings that we have. One person, one vote, not billionaires buying elections. So what I have done is try to take Vermont's values to Washington, and I would very humbly ask the people of Vermont to allow me to serve another term.
Lauren Zupan.
Thank you, Jane, and thank you to VPR and for everybody here who is part of the infrastructure of this program. I am thrilled at the prospect and the opportunity to serve the people of the state of Vermont. Our system of free enterprise has brought more success in the shortest amount of time by feeding, housing, and clothing with freedom more people in the history of the world. The people of Vermont have been an important part of the backbone of our nation, and the principles of independence and self-care and taking care of one's neighbor have always been part and parcel of our greatness. This is a system which is on the threshold right now of breaking out into a golden age of renaissance. Instead, what Senator Sanders wants to offer us is a system of top-down government control where the government exercises its rights to tell us everything we can, have, and should do. I ask that we reinvigorate in this digital golden age of Vermont's renaissance the principles that made America great in the first place. I would be honored to have your vote to be a full-time, dedicated, six-year senator for all the people of Vermont. Thank you.
Well, that concludes the VPR Vermont PBS Senate debate here on Vermont Edition. I want to thank our participating candidates, Bernie Sanders and Lawrence Zupan.
My pleasure.
You can find VPR's campaign coverage, including interviews with all the candidates on the ballot for statewide and federal office, at our website, vpr.net. The VPR Vermont PBS debate series is produced by Sam Gale Rosen, Patty Daniels, Keith Swan, Brian Stevenson, Rick Sangari, and Matthew Smith. We have production support from Michelle Owens and Ty Robertson. Audio engineering is by Chris Albertine, Frank Alwine, Mary Engish, and Peter Engish. Project managers were Anna Post and John Van Hoosen. Music is by Eric Ewazen and the New Trombone Collective. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for joining us.